From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, a major policy bill that the president wanted has been signed into law. Republicans are touting a lot of the changes, but what will it mean for Illinois, its government, and its residents? We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, professor emeritus and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week is Brendan Moore, reporter with Lee Enterprises. Brendan, it's always good to have you back on the show.
Always a pleasure to be on, Sean.
So let's start by just talking about the impact. Brendan, you've already done an article on this. You've been watching this. Overall, it's, let's start with Medicaid. There is a lot of discussion about people may lose Medicaid benefits. What does that mean for people here in the state and for the government?
Yeah, Sean. So in this One Big Beautiful Bill, one of the ways to pay for some of the tax cuts included are significant cuts to the social safety net. And the biggest chunk of that comes from Medicaid. And that comes through basically enacting new work requirements for people that are on Medicaid and also changing some of the provisions of how states fund their Medicaid programs. So the work requirements could throw up to 12 million people off of healthcare, including some estimates kind of differ, but say 330,000 people in Illinois to as high as 535,000 people, just because they're adding new layers of paperwork and making it more difficult for people to receive their Medicaid benefits. And then on the other end of it, and I think this part, I don't know if it gets enough attention, is the legislation kind of reins in the state's use of what's known as the provider tax. So basically, states impose a tax on hospitals, on nursing homes, on some of these other healthcare institutions. They fund their state share of Medicaid through that, and that also ups their match from the federal government. So that means billions of dollars to states for Medicaid, to hospitals in the state. And so basically Illinois can do up to 6% now. Within a few years, it's going down to 3%, which means less state funding for Medicaid, but also a smaller federal match. So that's going to cost billions of dollars and could imperil especially hospitals in rural areas that are already struggling to stay afloat. So in terms of impact of Medicaid, you're going to see less people covered. You're going to see an impact on hospitals, both because they're not going to be getting as much from these revenue streams that they've been able to rely on, and also they're going to have less patients that are on Medicaid to serve. So it's going to have a significant impact, and Governor Pritzker has talked about how the state can't really backfill this. No state can really backfill this. The federal government, kind of deals in the billions and trillions. The state governments deal in the millions and billions. Unless there's a tax increase, a massive tax increase at the state level, it's going to be very hard to see how the state's going to be able to fund Medicaid at the levels it has, given the provisions that are in this One Big Beautiful Bill that President Trump signed last week.
And Charlie, just since I've been covering state government, the expansions of Medicaid here in Illinois have been pretty amazing to watch. But I will say, and I'll get your take on that, but I do think that it has seemed like a bit of a gimmick or counting gimmick, a gimmick maybe that was going on through the years to enable to get more of a Medicaid match. So, I mean, to some extent, I do understand what Republicans are saying about that, like the provider tax was being discussed, but I want to get your take on it.
Yeah, that's a pretty common practice by most states, and I think it underscores the problem that I see in healthcare in this country, that we do not have universal healthcare, as most other developed countries do. And because of that, there's kind of this patchwork, and states have to try and figure out how to come up with money And because the federal government has allowed states to, in essence, tax hospitals and then use that money to pay for health care, and the federal government will match that health care. So it's a way for the states to make our limited dollars go further. And one of the things that annoys me is all this talk about, well, we're doing this because of waste, fraud, and abuse. I would guess that the amount of waste, fraud, and abuse that exists in the health care system has very little to do with the patients who need care. It's more some of the providers who cheat. One of the things I found interesting also is the fact that some analyses have suggested that this could cause 9 rural hospitals to close. And of those 9, 6 of them are in southern Illinois in Mike Boss' legislative district. A couple of them are in east central Illinois at the tail end of the Congressman Kelly's south suburb district that reaches all the way down almost to Danville. And then there's one that's actually in Lee County, a hospital in Dixon. So that's the impact of these cuts is going to be really felt by constituents in some of these rural areas where it's not a matter of what, like here in Springfield, you have a choice. You can go to St. John's, you can go to Memorial, you can go to Springfield Clinic. On the other hand, if you're living down in southern Illinois, in the hospital that's nearest to you closes, instead of maybe a 10-minute drive when you're suffering a heart attack, you maybe have a half-hour drive or an hour drive to get to the nearest hospital. So I think it's going to be really a difficult thing for people to get the kind of health care they need when these cuts take effect. Yeah. And another thing I find interesting, and I guess it's kind of cynical, is the timing on all this is we give the tax cuts right away, but we don't make the cuts to Medicaid until after the next midterm election. And the Republican strategy is, well, the Democrats have been saying how people are going to lose their health care. Well, that's not true. Wheeler, did you lose your health care? No. See, the Democrats are feeding you a line. And then once the midterms are over, then all this stuff hits, and suddenly people realize that, in fact, what the Democrats are warning about has, in fact, occurred. And Republicans were just being, I guess what you'd say, politically astute to try and disguise that fact.
Are you hearing much on that, Brendan, as far as you know, what residents are saying? I mean, people do pay attention, but like Charlie was saying, we may not be seeing the impact just yet of what has been voted on.
The famous line that Speaker Pelosi used back about the Affordable Care Act is that, you know, we have to pass it to find out what's in it, right? It's kind of what we're seeing with this law, in a way that I think a lot of people are now just starting to kind of figure out some of the provisions in this bill. I mean, it is such a big bill that crosses so many different policy areas that, yeah, I mean, I don't think it'd be possible for people to know everything that's in it, but I think folks are getting a better idea now that there's been a lot more attention on it, a lot more reporting on it. And I think that's something that Democrats, a message they've been trying to get across to people, that look at the fine print of the bill. Like, what here is permanent? It's the tax cuts that disproportionately impact, benefit the wealthiest Americans. What's temporary? The president ran on, for instance, no taxes on your tips. Well, that provision's only in effect for a few years, and it's capped at $25,000. So there has been an effort, again, amongst opponents of the bill to showcase this to people that, you know, the only thing in here that really is permanent, that's going to be lasting, are these massive tax cuts that are going to be made permanent. What's temporary are some of these benefits for working people who are a few years down the line could be at risk of losing their health care or losing their food assistance or losing other benefits of the social safety net. That's going to be, I think, a big part of the messaging going forward on this bill. Obviously, Republicans are going to try to show that all the benefits that they say are going to come from it, lower tax rates and some of the other shinier objects that were included. But then Democrats are and other opponents of the bill are going to say, well, it's actually like they may be able to say that right now, but check 1 or 2 years down the line, and you're going to find those benefits are no longer there for people, except for mostly for the wealthiest Americans who will see their tax cuts permanently enshrined into law.
And Charlie, it does strike me that you mentioned hospitals. Well, nursing homes are another part of this as well. They could be closing, especially in some of these rural areas. The idea that, maybe down the road, oh, we'll fix things, or maybe we'll just reverse any changes we make down the road, that can be really hard to do if some of these facilities close. I mean, first of all, nobody's getting rich taking Medicaid patients. Most of the time, they're barely covering any cost, if that. So I'm not sure if, like, for example, many of these rural hospitals were to close, that you would see them reopen maybe ever. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think that's the real danger. It's not that they would be temporarily shut down. It's that they would just go out of existence. The difficulty is when you close something down like that, then to try and reopen it, get the staffing, get the facilities, get everything ready, it's really hard. And some of these hospitals, for example, the ones that they're suggesting are going to close, they identified them, and they're all in, six out of the nine are in Southern Illinois. There are also hospitals in Chicago that serve low-income families where maybe the majority of their patients are on Medicaid, and they will not be able to survive if they lose those dollars and if there's no way to replace them. And so that's been raised as an issue also. So this is really I think it's very bad public policy.
That's
But on
all.
the other hand, I'm not a billionaire, and I'm not looking forward to getting my taxes cut.
This does strike me as what happens when parties take full control. And it can be either party, that quite often they overestimate their power. And Charlie, would you agree with that? I mean, in this case, the pendulum always swings a little bit. I know there are people who voted for Donald Trump for various reasons. Many times they voted for him on the economy, but I don't know that this was right on their radar. I'm not sure that, grandma getting kicked out of her nursing home was on their radar. And I know a lot of the people in some very red districts, those are areas where a high percentage of people are, get Medicaid and SNAP benefits. So I'm guessing that for many people, they may be taking a second look when these midterms come around. That would be a concern if I was a Republican lawmaker right now.
Yeah, and as I said, I think that's why it's structured so that you don't really get the full impact of all the cuts to the social programs until after the midterms. It's been described as the greatest transfer of wealth from the middle income and lower income people to the wealthiest 10% of Americans in U.S. history. And it really is. It's sort of like a reverse Robin Hood. But that's what the powers that be decided they wanted to do. And I think one of the things that is also in here that we haven't mentioned yet is they're vastly expanding the budget for the Department of Homeland Security. So in my mind, again, it's very xenophobic. It's very racist. If you have brown skin, we're going to stop you. The Gestapo is going to stop you and show us your papers. And they'll be wearing their masks with no identification. All the stuff that I find very, very disturbing. And it's the kind of thing that I don't think people, when they voted and they voted for Donald Trump, part of it was that they were really put off by the Democrats. The Democratic Party messed things up. Joe Biden hung around too long. And Trump is a very good salesman. I give him credit for that. He's a great performance artist. He sold people on what he was telling them. And I think a lot of the messaging, as I say, had to do with we have to stop these immigrants who are coming into our neighborhoods and terrorizing people and eating cats and dogs, you know, all the nonsense that they spewed in the campaign.
Well, there is no doubt that the state did spend quite a bit of money on like immigrant health care, as we saw an influx of migrants coming from the southern border here to Illinois over the last couple of years. But Brendan, it seems to me in the state, we just went through a budget period here with the state and a budget making process. Things are tight, there's no doubt, for the state. How much can Illinois really do if Medicaid needs more money or SNAP or any of these things need more money that the federal government's not going to be there to help? How much can Illinois really do on its own? Because I know there are going to be people calling for that as well.
So at this point, not a lot. Again, unless there's an appetite for a tax increase in this state, and I don't think that there is. The good thing is that there is some time, that lawmakers don't have to take action right away. They can kind of digest some of these cuts and hopefully come up with a plan for how to deal with some of these cutbacks. But yeah, to your point, if you want to increase state funding for Medicaid or for SNAP or any of these other programs, then that might mean cutbacks in other areas. Or if you want to maintain services at the levels that they're currently at, while also maintaining, services for Medicaid and for these other programs, then you have to find the money somewhere. And we've seen them get creative with accounting in the past. We saw just this past, a month ago when they passed the budget, they found various revenue streams to make the math work. But I mean, this is a whole different scale. I mean, we're talking about, billions and billions of dollars a year, that the state might now have to backfill, and they won't be able to with the current revenue streams that the state has. So it'll be a very fascinating policy conversation to have about how to address some of the burdens that will now be at the states with the passage of this legislation. You know, some could say maybe this is an out for state lawmakers to reconsider, going back doing the graduate income tax again, which would require a affirmative vote from the state's voters. Or maybe you just increase the flat income tax rate or increase sales tax. I mean, there are ways you can fund these things. It's just a question of, is there the political will to do it? And again, maybe there would be if you can say this is Donald Trump's tax increase. We're doing this because we have to, because, the federal government is forcing us to do this because we have to fund these programs. But that still could be a tough sell, given some of the economic challenges that could be coming in the near future. We may be going to a recession. People are already struggling to pay their bills. And again, the governor has said several times throughout this year that the state can't backfill all of these cuts. I think they're going to try to mitigate some of the damage or some of the impact. He's been clearly trying to prepare people for what may come, and prepare people and let them know that the state can't necessarily come to the rescue and pick up what the federal government is going to be dropping.
Charlie, what do you think on that? Do you think the state is going to try to fill in some of this gap? Maybe it's too soon to say increase, but
I think, I think there'll be an effort made to try and figure out how can we do it. But I'm thinking that going into an election year with the governor running for re-election and maybe thinking about running for president later on, pushing for a tax increase is probably not high on his agenda. And the thing that it comes down to, though, and people maybe don't think about this, we're going to save this money because we're cutting these Medicaid benefits. The folks who are getting these benefits are not going to disappear. They're still going to go to hospitals. They may wait longer until they really have an emergency, at which point the care might cost more, but they're not going to be turned out in the street. And so those costs will be passed on to other people, people who have private insurance, people who are covered by other plans, people who just pay out of their pocket. So it's not that there's going to be a huge savings in healthcare. It's just we're going to be shifting who pays for it. And we're going to, in my judgment, we're going to kind of disincentivize people to get the preventive care that they need. So I think this is if you listen to me, you can tell I think this is a rotten idea. It's probably one of the worst ideas that's come along since I've been watching this stuff.
But I would also think that emergency rooms, wouldn't you think that, Charlie, they're going to be packed?
Oh,
sure. We've seen that in the past before some of these expansions of Medicaid happened. People couldn't go to the doctor for preventive care, so they just wind up at the emergency room. Those things, you know, going there was, you were going to wait hours sometimes.
Yeah, and it costs so much more. When our kids were little, they used to get ear infections, and they never conveniently got them during the doctor's office hours. And sometimes we were able to take them to, like, urgent care. Sometimes, if it was, like, 1 o'clock in the morning, we had to go to the emergency room. And the bill from the emergency room was a lot higher than urgent care, which was also a lot higher than our primary physician. So, yeah, people are going to be forced into taking kind of last-minute emergency measures, which will be more costly in the long run, and somebody's going to pay for it. And it's going to be one way or another. And if it's not with government help, it's going to be private payers paying more.
We can't really get through this entire bill in one show. But one thing I did want to mention here, Brendan, is clean energy. A lot of the clean energy provisions that have been enacted over the last several years, those are being rolled back. So quickly, what would that mean for Illinois?
It's going to mean that the transition to carbon-free energy production in the state is going to be slower. I mean, straight up, like there are a number of projects that have been in the pipeline in this state and across the country for wind and solar that really were only feasible because of some of the credits that were included in the Inflation Reduction Act that was signed into law by President Biden a few years ago. This law rolls back those credits. I believe projects have to be approved and ready to go starting construction, I believe, this year if they want to claim that credit. And so, you know, in the years following, I mean, it's not going to stop, you know, the transition of, to greener energy sources, but it's going to slow it down. And and something that some folks have highlighted here too is that it's a lot of jobs, potentially thousands of jobs in Illinois associated with these projects that are not going to happen now. As we know, Illinois has very ambitious climate goals. The state has a policy of trying to get to carbon-free energy production 100% by 2045. And this will make that a lot more difficult of a goal to attain, and not to mention could potentially lead to, you know, reliability concerns and affordability concerns when there are already significant, you know, rate increases going into effect this summer, especially in central and southern Illinois. The less energy you put on the grid, the more difficulties there's going to be, again, on maintaining load during, you know, the summer months and the winter months when you have extreme temperatures, and then also the longer term goals of having a cleaner environment and producing energy in a way that is more sustainable.
Just about a minute left here. And Brendan, I want to ask you, because you've been following this, Decatur is the latest city out there trying to get a gambling operation. They're calling this, I believe, a racino. Didn't happen during the spring session, but I thought we'd have you on here. We might as well get an update on where this might stand going into the fall or even next year.
Racino means a racetrack with an associated casino, slots, and table games. This was floated in the spring legislative session. horse racing industry has really struggled in the state over the past several years. This would be kind of a shot in the arm, specifically for the harness racing industry. They moved the ball a little bit forward in the spring. They had a hearing on it in the last week of session, but did not get across the finish line. So the conversations are continuing behind the scenes. There's a lot of stakeholders. Anybody that's ever followed a gaming bill in Illinois knows that it is never a simple proposition. There are a lot of players in the industry and a lot of stakeholders that need to be satisfied and have clout that can derail legislation. That's kind of what they're working towards right now. The goal is fall veto session to have a bill that would authorize Decatur-Racino, and we would have other things in there too, that would help satisfy some of the concerns, some of the other stakeholders. I won't get too much into it now because I could talk about it all day, but that would be something to keep an eye on for the fall veto session in October.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that. Let's go to our notes from the field, and Charlie, we'll go to you first this week.
Well, the Office of State Treasurer Michael Frerichs announced this week that they're going to be sending out checks to some 600,000 people to return $45 million to residents. The treasurer said that this is basically money that folks didn't know they had. The state gets possession of unclaimed property. So these are checks that people haven't claimed. And the treasurer says the first thing we tell people is this: the money belongs to you. The check is real. This is not a scam. And the second thing we tell them is cash the check. And most of the checks will be around $50. The officials will say that you'll get a letter in the mail saying that your check is coming, and then later on you get the actual check. As I say, for roughly 600,000 people in Illinois, there'll be a pleasant surprise later on this summer.
All right. And Brendan.
Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, who is running for the U.S. Senate seat held by retiring Senator Dick Durbin, announced earlier this week that she will not be accepting contributions from corporate political action committees. It's a stand that has become very popular on the Democratic side of the aisle in recent years, as folks want to prove their independence from corporate influence, from the influence of big money in politics. And it's a stance that sets her apart from her major opponents in the Democratic primary, Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, Congresswoman Robin Kelly. So she's trying to create a contrast, although it should be noted that there are significant caveats. There are ways around this pledge. I think the biggest one is that the presence of super PACs, which can raise and spend unlimited amounts of money that are independent of a campaign or a candidate, but can spend money advocating for them. Lieutenant Governor Stratton, there is a PAC that has formed, that super PAC has formed to support her candidacy, which could be a vehicle for high dollar contributions from folks like Governor J.B. Pritzker, who has endorsed her. So no corporate PAC money, but she still has an ability to raise significant amounts indirectly.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Brendan Moore with Lee Enterprises. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.